Thank you very much. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
It's easy for you. I'm up here and I'm terrified. But, you know, I have trouble with stairs, and in particular with steps. A bit of walking is temporary. It's not going to be forever. But it reminds me of that story. I'm very sympathetic to her, about the good time girl who was getting on in years. And she said, "It's not the work that's killing me, it's the stairs." So, I know how she feels. But my name is Michael. I'm an alcoholic. And today is the 2nd of February 2020, and it's the anniversary of my best friend in recovery. His name is Roger. He comes from St. Leonard's-on-Sea, and today he has 39 years. Roger is here. Stand up. I've known him for all 39 years of that, so it's wonderful that he is here, that we are here, that I'm alive. I've left my badge on because it says Michael Chiswick, and people come up to me and they don't know where Chiswick is. They pronounce it Chiswick. Well, it's called Chiswick. We don't know why we don't pronounce it properly, but that's where I live, and it's the most wonderful part of London ever. And through it all goes what is called the Chiswick High Road, and I live off that. And it is a tree-lined boulevard. It's got wide pavements. It looks more like Paris now. We've got coffee shops, Costa and Nero and all of that. And I simply love it. And when I walk down the Chiswick High Road, I meet people I know in recovery. Years ago, it was very simple. They were in AA. Nowadays, they're in AA, NA, CA, Overeaters Anonymous, Gamblers Anonymous. And we all say hello to one another. And I simply love talking to people in recovery in my local high street for the simple reason no one notices me. And when I was drinking, I knew every doorway in that high street. I peed in it. I threw up in them. I collapsed in it. I'm not a violent man. The police knew me. They knew I was harmless. They used to scrape me off the pavement and take me home. How about that? And say, "Take care of yourself, Michael." So it's very, very important in my life. And we have wonderful meetings in Chiswick. You must all come. And on the Monday evening between 6 and 7, we have a meeting which is called Sober Feet. Please come to it, but not all at once, just a minute. So it is my life, and any time I walk into the Chiswick High Road, I know some people jump out of bed and they collapse to their knees and all of that, and I agree with it. It's something wonderful to do. But I just walk into the Chiswick High Road and I think, my God, I'm doing well, you know. And I've always had a great love of the fellowship from day one. I went to my first meeting in what is called Hind Street, at that time it was Thayer Street, in London. And I remember when I was going in, I thought of my father, who was dead, long dead, and because I was out of control as a teenager, I still think sometimes I still am, but he said to me on one occasion, after I'd really been out of control, he said, "I don't know where you're going to end up, Michael. I think it's going to be the end of a rope." And when I was dragging myself up the railings, feeling really beaten, you know, my life was in tatters. I was about to be sacked from a very good job. I had disgraced myself in front of the managing director by doing my usual trick when I was pissed, and that was falling to the left onto the floor in front of clients. It's not a very good thing. I don't recommend you do that. And, you know, I didn't realize that going through that door was going to be the beginning. I didn't know what it was. And my memories of my first meeting I treasure. I was drunk, but everyone ignored me. I had got my answers ready. When people were going to ask how much I drank, I was going to say, oh, shut enough, the puff, you know, I like red wine. And I get wines from the Neckar Valley. I'm very keen on those. And, you know, PM and I, that's Princess Margaret, and I always, always drink, you know, famous Grouse whiskey, and it's very good for my chest, all that bollocks. And they just ignored me. They never said anything at all. But I went up to this woman who was very worried about her cat who had cancer, and she kept talking about her cat, and she was very, very, she was driving the meeting mad. And she wanted her cat to be accepted by the Cancer Research Centre in Bristol. But they wouldn't accept the cat because they said they only accepted human beings. And she was arguing and saying, but, you know, when they said that we have to have, to be able to talk to patients. And she said, I know what my cat is saying, I can tell you. So I went up to her at the end of the meeting because I like animals and I have cats, and I said, you know, you really must love your cat so much and you have to make a wise decision about it with a good veterinary surgeon. And a woman came up to me who was smoking a fag. That's a cigarette, Americans. Don't think of that. And she's pulling on this fag, and she said, I haven't seen you at this meeting before. I said, of course you haven't. I haven't been here, that's why. And then she said, but what meetings do you go to? And I said, I've never been to one. This is my first. She said, you're a newcomer. And there was a sharp intake of breath from all these people who had been arguing with the poor woman. And they said, you're a newcomer. And this stroppy guy came up and he said, why didn't you say you were a newcomer? We asked for. I said, because I didn't know what a newcomer was, you idiot. So I said, well, while I have your attention, I don't like your attitude, I don't like the way you're addressing me, and I don't like the way you've been talking to that woman with the sick cat. He said, woo, he said, woo, woo, I'm sorry, I apologize. I said, that's better. So I had arrived. But the reason I went to the centre of town is I didn't want to meet anybody local. You know, I really didn't. The lady who was pulling on the fag was old Kay from Chiswick, round the corner from my bloody house. And she had this other friend of hers called Jean. Both of them are now dead. Jean was called Big Tits Jean. I don't know why. And they became firm friends of mine. And Jean said, when I've been to, in Oxford Street, I began to shake very, very violently. And you know, when you're shaking with alcohol or anything, and people are looking at you, it gets worse and much, much, much worse. And I decided I'd get rid of these two broads, and I knew they wouldn't serve me in the pub. They don't serve people when they shake quite so much. I go into a hotel, which was my usual way to try and calm myself down. But they wouldn't go away. They were clinging to me. So we got a taxi back to my house, and then Jean said, I'll take you to a meeting tonight. And I said, but I've already been to a bloody meeting. What are you talking about? And she did. And Kay said to me, Michael, don't drink this afternoon. Have a cup of tea with some sugar in it. And please, try not to drink. You know, I had the tea and the sugar and I threw up and I didn't drink again. And I went to the meeting in the evening. And that's when all of my great time in my life started. And the best thing about my early recovery is I met bad company. I know you shouldn't do it, but I did. I met two guys. There were three of us together, all brand newcomers. And we went to two, three meetings a day. And we were very well behaved. And in the coffee bar, we slagged everybody off. And that was very, very important to me because I learned one important thing, which happens even to this present day. I listen at every meeting I go to. I had to listen or else I wouldn't be able to slag everyone off in the coffee shop. That's where the habit came in. We had no intention of doing the steps, but we went to a step meeting in Farm Street because it was fashionable. We were movers and shakers. We went there. And we had no intention of having a sponsor. Can you hear?
Yes.
Is that better?
Better.
I'm not used to all this public speaking crap. And, that's better. I can hear an echo now. Is that better? Why didn't you say it before? Now I have lost my track. Where was I? About my what? Anyway, that's how it all started. But what really surprises me about my early recovery is that we were determined not to do anything. We were rebels. And we decided after a while, it's like osmosis, we just picked up some of the program without consciously trying. And one was, we knew we were out of control, so we used to say, we shouldn't be gossiping about these people. So what we'll do is we'll come off the program for 2 minutes and then go back on. We didn't have a bloody program, you know. And although we came off and slagged everyone off again, I never remember going back on. But, you know, after a while, what happened to me was extraordinary. I really realized that when I didn't slag somebody off, I felt a bit better. And the next time I did it consciously, I felt better. So after a while, I was exerting control over myself because I liked feeling better all the time. Now, with regard to sponsorship, I was the main leader in not having a sponsor. As far as I was concerned, sponsors were just control freaks. They were a sort of spoil sports. And there were killjoys, and they disapproved of sex. I knew because they weren't having any, you know. But then my two bad company mates went and did the dirt without telling me. They went and got a sponsor each, and that meant I was on my own. And I used to say I was very competitive. I am competitive. And I thought, bugger it, I better get a sponsor. So there was a guy at my home group, and he was much younger than me, and he had 2.25 years in the fellowship, which was long. And I knew he was going to Farm Street, where they had those dreadful step meetings. So I asked him to be my sponsor, and he said yes. Then I took off all over the centre of London again, down the crypt, up Tottenham Court Road, Hop Gardens, saying, not alone have I got a sponsor, I've got the best sponsor. Well, he wasn't. He was dull. And I thought, oh God, have I made a mistake? But I had gone around. Pride wouldn't allow me dismiss him or sack him. So I thought, I'll just let him fail out. He was completely wrong for me, utterly and completely. He was the wrong sponsor for 22 whole years. And during that period, I learned very little about him, but I learned everything about myself. I learned how to take care of myself. I learned how to be disciplined, how to interpret the steps in my own way. His advice with regard to higher power was one sentence: find your own higher power, develop it, and never inflict it on another human being. And that stays with me. So after 22 years, I was very well known in the fellowship. I'm called Chiswick Michael because I live in Chiswick. And there were so many Michaels in the fellowship. You know, there are an awful lot of Kevins nowadays. Have you noticed that? And so I was from my area, which I richly deserved. And I was well known locally, nationally, internationally. And then I relapsed one morning, just like that, one day. It was in Beverly Hills, and I have rituals in the morning. I get out of bed when I wake up. I learned it from my early recovery, and I go for a walk. I walk the dogs, always. And I kneel down somewhere in the morning. That's what I do. But I haven't got any dogs. I've walked my dogs this morning here, but I haven't got any. They're the dogs in my mind which are unresolved resentments, you know, which are going to start, they're going to start kicking off and driving me mad. So when I get fresh air in my body, I feel better. And I had done that in the Church of Good Shepherd in Beverly Boulevard, as I always did in the morning. And by sunset, I had relapsed. And I went to this very, very grand party. I was the only one who hadn't been nominated for an Academy Award. And it was in a hotel. And during the party, they were passing this black tray around the place with white lines on it. And I had never done a single drug in my whole life. And I felt like the Irish country bumpkin I am. I come from the Irish country. And I thought, oh, it's time to join the real human race. I remember doing my first line of cocaine. I sneezed and all of this stuff. You're more experienced than I thought you were. It all went onto the carpet. And anyone who knows America, you know, they've got off-white, creamy carpets. You can't, it's not like on an English carpet, you can find this stuff. So that was my introduction to this wonderful life of drug-taking. And I was staying with a friend of mine, she still is a great friend, and when I turned up a day and a half later, I went on a bender straight away, she said, "Where have you been?" I said, "I've been up in the hotel." And she said, "There's a man involved in this. Who is he?" And I mentioned the name, and she said, "Oh," she said, "isn't he wonderful? I dated his grandfather." So then she said, what were you up to?" I said, "You know, Susie." I said, "In actual fact, Susie, I've had the most wonderful time. I'm on drugs now, and..." "It's marvelous. It's simply wonderful." And she said, "Really?" She said, "We must do it." And I said, "Yes, it's the best." Luckily, she didn't do it. In April, I go to her 94th birthday. And she never took a drug. Thank goodness I didn't destroy her. We are still very, very, very... Well, she's my closest friend. So that's the way it started. I was in New York a few months later. I travel a lot to America with some newfound friends. They're creatures of the night, incidentally. And we got very worried about a television program which said, in order to get your nose relined with gold after you've been snorting too much cocaine, it's going to cost either $17,000 or $27,000. I thought, I'm not going to do it. I was the only one of the four of us, who did something about it. They didn't do anything. They continued on, but I just changed over to smoking crack. I did that to save my nose. There's always a solution. But very, very quickly, I deteriorated down. I became much worse. I was on heroin. I was injecting, and I became very, very crazy. I was on that most dangerous of all drugs, ketamine. And I'm so pleased that I talk about drugs in Alcoholics Anonymous and none of you have passed out yet. And that the fellowship is growing up, because when I returned, when I was so broken and so damaged, the most abiding memories I have is the cruel things which other members of the fellowship said to me. They, you know, it's really what comes to my mind. There were lots and lots of good things that were said, and I was properly welcomed. But one woman came up and she said, "I knew you'd go." And I knew her. We came in the same year, and she said, "You've got money. Anyone with money goes." I thought, really, give yourself a break, child. But it got worse. Another great friend of mine came up and she said, "You look awful." I said, "Thanks, that's all." I did look awful. And she said, God is punishing you. God punishes evil people like you who never could accept his presence in their lives. You could never, ever get the grip of the steps and practice. And I thought, leave me alone. Another guy condemned me publicly on a speaker like I'm doing now and said, scum like you, Michael, low life scum, I've got no right in Alcoholics Anonymous. You should fuck off to NA or go and form your own 12-step group, but don't talk about drugs here. And it was good advice. I went to NA. And they were young, and they were kind, and they were good looking, and they hugged me and said, you're wonderful, you're doing well, you know, and come and sit here. And don't worry how miserable you feel. You're going to feel better at some time in your life. And it just was simply wonderful to be with these young people who didn't discriminate against me. And that was the beginning of my life again. You know, other people in the fellowship said to me, oh, Michael, since you haven't taken a drink, you haven't had a slip. I never took a drink. It confused other people. It never confused me. I knew in Beverly Hills that night, in that hotel, and I see it now, going back to Beverly Hills, I see that suite of rooms in that hotel because I stay with my friend in Palm Drive. And it brings back the memory of how I damaged myself, how I thought I was doing something truly sophisticated. But it led back to that word which is called alcoholism. You know, and being out of control. Now, it's Roger's anniversary today. On Wednesday is the 5th. I'll have another anniversary. How about that? Now, when I came back into recovery, I was pushing 70. And on Wednesday, 1 hour at a time, I will have 14 years. And I don't need anybody to tell me that I am doing bloody well. I have had bonus years. I pulled myself around the place, and people are a witness to it. I was damaged. I was broken. I really think I had the most terrible nervous breakdown. I was always crying out to myself. I developed something which is very important in my life in those days. I was so terrified of picking up anything. I used to talk to my hands. I do it now during my morning rituals. This morning I did it in the local church over there. I go into a church every day. I don't believe in God. I find my own way around the interpretation of the steps. It's strong and it's healthy. And in my prayer, I do pray. How about that? That shocks you all, doesn't it? Because I learned in particular in America, in New Mexico, I go to the Santa Fe Opera Festival every year. I'm a patron there. And there I learned from the Pueblo tribes about prayer. How you honor the sun. How you honor the light. How you honor the sound of water as it trickles down to the Great Lakes. How you enjoy the birds that bring nothing but joy into our lives as they fly in the sky. And it's all about life around us. But I never ever ask for anything. I have to accept my own talents. I'm quite capable of doing stuff. I work very, very hard. I've got a damn good pension. I just lie in bed. You all have to work. But I don't. So it really is a wonderful life. I'm no longer a young man. In fact, I'm enjoying old age. You know, my cousin is exactly the same age. He's dead now. I miss him terribly. His name is Bernard, and we were born in the same year. And he kicked off with his birthday on the 11th of January. So we all knew we were going to be that age later in the year. And I went to the Brighton Convention. 5 minutes, thank you. And he lives in Brighton, but anyone who knows England, he lives in Hove. Hove, actually. You know, when people say, you live in Brighton, you say, Hove, actually. So we call Hove, Hove, actually. He lived there, and I hadn't seen him for a few years, mainly because he's got a dickhead of a boyfriend who doesn't like me. But at the convention, I said, well, Bernard, why don't you come and join me? We had such a wonderful life together, all of our lives, you know. And he was better looking than me, much better looking. He was more charming, but I could pull quicker. That was important. But he turned up at the hotel, and he was on a Zimmer frame, a walking frame, the Americans call it. And he was bent over, and his hair growing out of his ears and his eyebrows, he looked awful, and I was terribly shocked. And he was shuffling along, and I just couldn't get over it. And we sat down in a settee in the hall, and while we were there, he was saying, no, 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 moaning and groaning. He sounded okay on the telephone. And he'd been smoking heavily and drinking heavily, you know, and these people were passing by or were at the convention, and all the girls were coming up and saying, hello, Michael, and kissing me, and guys were going by and saying, hello, Michael, and hugging me. And he said, who are all these people, Michael? What's going on? I said, well, Bernard, since you ask, it's a convention I'm at here. And he said, what convention? And I said, it's Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh, he said, you were perfectly okay till that lot got the mitts into you. So I realized I couldn't take him to the restaurant where I wanted. I took him into the hotel restaurant where he cheered up and I became very cheerful. When I got my hotel bill, it was because he had spent £105 on large brandies. But he did say something to me. He said, isn't it awful getting old? And I said, no. And he said, surely you realize getting old is not good. I said, no, I rather enjoy it. He said, you enjoy it? He said, tell me one thing that you enjoy about old age. I said, Bernard, I can say exactly what I want to say nowadays. And Bernard said, but you were doing that 60 years ago. Thank you very much. It's lovely.